Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Yo, what's up? Welcome back to the show. This is, of course, your host, David Scales. I'm bringing you an episode today with notable surf writer Chaz Smith. You know Chaz as the co-founder of BeachGrit.com. He also wrote a book a number of years, maybe 3 years ago called Welcome to Paradise, Now Go to Hell. He actually has a new book coming out called Cocaine Plus Surfing, A Love Story. So we discuss that in this episode. We discuss basically all the gossip that takes place over on Beach Grit. That is the purpose of this episode, to tease apart the comments section and some of the stories that take place over there and get into it beyond just black and white text on your screen. So we cover the blood feud, most recent blood feud between Reno Abalera and Matt Warshaw. We discuss the state of women surfing. Luke Davis's hair color, all sorts of stuff. So enjoy the episode. You can find everything that Chaz and I discuss on surfsplendorpodcast.com. And then, of course, make sure just to spend your time over on beachgrit.com. Chaz and I plan to get together in the future much more frequently. So send your feedback about this episode and we'll implement it in future episodes. All right. A couple final notes. You can support Surf Splendor in 2 ways. Make a donation, throw a couple of shekels in the bucket. That helps the show to stay alive. And then also, just rate and review the show on iTunes and then share the show with friends. The more listeners we have, the more we will be able to attract radical guests like Chaz himself to spread their influence on this show. All right? So thanks for doing that. So without further ado, this is David Scales getting Chaz to give me the grit. Enjoy the show. I'll be back at the end to sign us off. Third time we've recorded together. First time you had just released your book, and Welcome to Paradise, Now Go to Hell. Give that a plug.
Thank you.
And so it was much more like a long-form interview. And then last time was with Derek, and so it was a little bit more just like talking about what's happening in the world of surfing as a reflection of your guys' website, Beach Grit. I realized the only value you have to me now is as a gossip column. Like, I want to be here to gossip with you. I don't want to interview you anymore. Let's just gossip.
That's
dude. Perfect.
That's all I care about anymore anyway.
Yeah, perfect. Because I know you and I are both scrolling Instagram all day, every day, just like trying to figure out who's Dion Agius sleeping with and what's Kelly. When's he going to retire? And is he going to like accidentally reveal that in the subtext of a post? And so we're scrolling that. That's what I want to talk to you about. That's what, when I interview surfboard shapers, they don't care about it.
Yeah, no. I think, yeah. Does anybody care about it?
I don't know. You and I do.
I mean, totally. I completely do. I love surf gossip.
I would think readers of Beach Grit do.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, sure. Yeah. I think they care about
it. There
you
go. Yeah. So let's spill it, dude. Give me the grit.
What is the grit? Do you have anything? I've got little right now.
In terms of gossip?
Yeah. What do you
Shoot.
Got?
Shoot.
If you tee me off, maybe I've got something.
Okay. I'll give you a big one. And you're welcome to dodge this.
Yeah.
Even though listeners will judge you for dodging.
Yep.
What's up with Owen Wright? Missing last year and... Is there a backstory there that we're not aware of? The story is, of course, head trauma from duck diving, but we've never heard of somebody having head trauma from duck diving before.
See, so that, I guess that's my issue right there, right? I mean, there's a lot of rumors that are swirling that don't serve anybody to bring up. You know, I've tried to chase some of them down and will continue to try, or am continuing to try to get to the bottom of it. But to me, the bigger issue is, okay, so the WSL's... You know, and Rip Curl, for that matter, their statement was head trauma from duck diving. And then the whole thing has been real zip-lipped after that. Like, if it was that, I don't understand why they don't release medical records and why there's not a bigger conversation about the dangers of surfing, right? Because if we're out there, or if the WSL, you know, if the athletes are out there and there's potential for brain trauma from a duck dive, which, like, I think when I write about it, I write about it like it's ludicrous, but maybe it's not ludicrous, right? Maybe this is a genuine thing that could possibly, probably, you know, maybe happen.
Yeah.
But so where's the conversation about it? And to me, the fact that nobody is having a conversation about it, and everyone thinks that when I go around looking for truth, as it were, in this matter, people think I'm looking for nefarious things. If there was some other cause for his head trauma than a duck dive, great. Okay, we can talk about that. And to me, it wouldn't diminish the fact that he has come back. You know, that he was, from all accounts and from everything I saw, having trouble walking and having trouble paddling and things like that, to being, you know, a year later back at the top of his game. So it's an amazing story, no matter what the cause was. If the cause really is what was purported, where's the medical records that back that up, and why can't we have a conversation about the, you know, the dangers of head trauma and duck diving and surfing? Like, why is it, nobody's willing to have that conversation, which is totally strange to me.
It is very strange. I understand the not releasing medical records, I guess, because I don't know, it's just weird. Like, it almost validates, it somehow plays into
a conspiracy?
Yeah.
But you knock the conspiracy out right away when you present. I mean, if people are whispering, right? And if you don't care, then you don't care, and maybe nobody cares and they're happy to, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't much matter. But again, I don't want to see the medical records either just for some kind of creepy gossipy way. Like, I'm really curious, genuinely curious, what a duck dive does to the human brain.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that interesting to you?
It's fascinating.
Yeah, like, because what, you know, there is a lot of force, right? I mean, there's a lot of stuff happening. There's a lot of stuff moving around. I've never heard about it happening. You never have. I don't think there's any recorded thing in surf history of this, but it doesn't...
That doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Precisely,
you know, because it's like, there's obviously, even in the NFL, and like, they're just now getting around to measuring those things.
And see, and that's 100%, I guess, my frustration and point is, like, and again, I get that I'm a muckraker, and so people think that I'm automatically raking muck when I start asking questions about stuff, and so they'll shut down and be like, you know, this is just rude. I think that the people who have talked to me about it will they'll speak to me like I'm kicking a guy, you know, making fun of a guy who just died or something like that.
Right.
And like, there's none of, I want none of that. I like, it's all fine. If there's some muck there, then sure, let's rake it up. But really and genuinely, the concussion thing in the NFL, you would have thought that, you know, from day one, these guys are running around hitting each other with their heads, that people would have known about it, et cetera, et cetera. But it literally just came out within the last two years, and the whatever, what's it called? What's the thing called that makes people commit suicide? And
yeah.
That specific brain trauma.
Right.
All of this stuff is just been revealed. And so if Owen genuinely had this thing that happened to him, right, and Rip Curl and the WSL is keeping it under wraps because they don't want to, they think there's some kind of conspiracy or something, then I just, like, to me it behooves them, both the WSL and Rip Curl, to deal with this really seriously. If that's what you said happened, if that's the truth, that he had brain damage from a duck dive, then it behooves both Rip Curl and the WSL to make as much information available, you know, as much information as they can widely available, so that real people can have a discussion. The fact that there's zero discussion, other than, wow, isn't this a miracle? Isn't this great that he's winning?
Yeah.
Is like, not only is it absurd, to me it's dangerous.
It is irresponsible, for sure, if that's the truth. And then that dovetails with the fact that the surf industry generally avoids risky conversations, like the Andy Irons story and all that sort of stuff. And the big companies that are sponsoring these athletes cover up, actually, details. So there's that, you know. I feel like Beach Grit might be the first source that the just general public has for uncovering some of those things, other than maybe like a message board on the back end of Surfer Magazine or something.
So I had somebody tell me recently that nobody wants, you know, specifically about the Owen story, and the person told me nobody's going to give you anything because nobody wants Beach Grit to break the story, right? Where I think that the general perception of Beach Grit, of course, that we, you know, foster by, as Derek says, tap dancing with our headlines and, you know, having a good time, is that, like, you know, nobody's gonna help us out. Nobody's gonna treat me like a proper investigative journalist in this one, even though that's what I really was. I tried really, really hard to get to the bottom of this, and I'm still trying. But that Beach Grit, in and of how it looks and how it feels and what it is an impediment to actually getting real truth out, because, yeah, people are just, yeah, like you said, the surf industry's afraid.
Well, okay, then. My counterpoint to that is so much of the surf media that I consume nowadays is in the comments section, actually. And it's not necessarily even the article itself. And I feel like that allows me to take the pulse of what's happening in the general public much more quickly, and I would say even more truthfully, than anything that a magazine's putting out or even than the website itself is publishing.
100. I mean, I agree with you 100%. Like, I think we're real lucky at Beach Grit to have the comment section that we do have. I think it's, I mean, we have exceptional people in there, and I don't know who lots of them are, but yeah, just the dialogue, I think, is, you know, is funny and fun, but it's also oftentimes very informed. And yeah, people are kicking interesting things around.
Well, there are a lot of anonymous commentators, but there's also Nick Carroll,
sure,
and there's Maurice Cole,
sure,
and so there's kind of legitimate insiders in the surf industry, and then the anonymous ones are largely insiders in the industry as well who'd rather not be named. But I mean, it truly, so what I'm saying is, with the Owen story, they're like, hey, nobody wants to break the story on Beach Grit. Well, hey, guess what?
Yeah.
They're going to. It just will be in the comments section. So you might as well control some of the story. Assuming there's a story to break, by the way. This is all alleged, of course, and we haven't even said what the alleged thing is.
Sure, but even to me, even if the story, though, is like, it's just never been properly dealt with, right? There's been two versions of what happened. The WSL had one, and then they changed their version.
Like, can you say what it was and what they changed?
I mean, there was one, I can't really remember offhand, but there was something about what Owen, like, just the order of events as it happened, right? Like, Owen came up and he either went to sleep or he went straight to the hospital or something. There's a pretty big discrepancy in the order of events as it played out, you know, right after it happened. And again, I'm not suggesting anything untoward, but I'm also wondering why like, I mean, that's serious, right? To allege that you have, not that he hit his head on the reef, not that he hit his head on the board, because the alleged, the statement was that it was from duck diving, right?
Mm-hmm. So the exact story that I remember hearing was, it was before Pipe Masters last year in December, and he actually got three unbelievable waves at Pipe that day. There's video footage of it. He's wearing the tank top short spring suit,
yeah,
blue. Gets three insane ones. And it was like, it was a big day, but it was kind of unruly, so it wasn't perfect. And he was ruling it out there. He got three insane ones, and then on his way back out was duck diving and got like flogged on a couple, went back to the Rip Curl house, took a nap. Wilkinson woke him up at some point and was just like, or maybe he woke up and Wilco was in the kitchen. He's like, dude, you look dazed and delirious. Let's get you to a hospital.
Yeah.
That was the story.
Yeah. And so, but again, like if they would have just said, if the statement that would have been released was just said he hit his head on his board or he hit his head on the reef, then there's no, there's no question. Or there's nowhere really to go from there.
But the duck dive.
The duck dive thing, to me, is where, okay, there's... And again, not to be suggesting anything nefarious, but just, if that's the truth, okay, how many times has that happened? Is this a real thing? Is there a way to prevent this, if this is a real thing? You know, are the surfers... And I think when I ride it on Beach Grit, sometimes I sound jokey, like I think I said, we need to do the Owen Wright helmet rule, right? Where all the surfers... If this is true... And the WSL is sending these guys out to, you know, I mean, how many of the breaks are big, you know, fairly aggressive,
shallow
breaks, you know, from Cloud Break to Chopu, Pipe, of course. And the WSL is rolling these guys out there, you know. Is the WSL, should they be actually looking at this? If this is what they said happened officially, shouldn't they be looking at this and make sure that, you know, how can we prevent this from happening again, or what? You know, I don't know. There's just, and there's zero discussion, no discussion, not a little bit, zero.
I'd like to rename it, not the Owen Wright helmet rule, but the Tom Carroll helmet rule.
Oh, it'd be so beautiful.
Or Liam McNamara, maybe.
And their Gaths out there.
Exactly.
Hot pink Gaths. Yeah, Gath can make a big comeback.
Is Gath still in business?
They've got to be, right?
Sure.
Yeah,
they sell three helmets a year, probably.
No, the kids, well, what's her name? The awesome Australian girl.
Oh,
the
Sally.
Saber Norris.
Oh, yeah.
Saber Norris and all her siblings, I think they're Gaths, but their folks make them wear helmets every time they surf.
Really?
I'm pretty sure they're Gaths. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're still in biz.
So the comment section not only is likely to release information like that, and like that's kind of, like I said, where I could take a pulse of the general public, it'll also tell me what the general public thinks of Luke Davis's latest hair color, and what they thought of Adriano making the final and winning in Rio. Like, all of it. It
totally
covers the gamut, you know?
Which are your favorite
commentators?
Or message boards to read? Like, do you read more than one?
Yeah. Stab, I read, and Beach Grit for sure. I don't know. I think Beach Grit probably gives me the most information.
I mean, because Stab hid their comments, or I mean, you have to go through the extra step, right? You have to click on the comments for it to open up, which I wonder.
Yeah, and even then, on certain articles, they don't even allow comments.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of the advertorial articles that they don't allow comments on. Okay, transitioning topics off Owen, but this actually relates to Owen. It's a theory that dawned on me recently. Again, relates to Owen. Remember the white wetsuit?
Yes.
Kelly Slater wore a bit.
Yeah.
Chloe wore it a little bit. The thing's like a superhero costume.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoever's wearing that thing rips. And like, I don't own one, but I feel like if I put one on, then do a 360 or something. Right?
Yeah.
So my new theory is, does blonde hair make you rip? We've got Ace Buchan made the final.
Yeah.
We've got Owen, John Florence, Luke Davis, Mick Fanning, Stephanie Gilmore. I'm looking at all these guys, I'm going, they all have one common denominator.
You know, that's really true. And I will say, you know, unless you're Brazilian, but of the Caucasians, is there any? Joel Parkinson has fallen off, right? He's not doing too good. Kelly's blowing it. Would be a brunette.
Would be.
Who else even has brown hair of the Caucasian surfers?
All the crappy ones.
Yeah, that's so true. So get blonde.
That's what I'm asking you. You have blonde hair, so
I do.
I'm like, dude.
I rip, kind of.
Obviously, you
I
must.
I ripped this morning, out there of D Street. I was getting it.
So I'm going to stop by my stylist on the way home.
Yeah, get a blonde.
Perfect. For it, dude. My favorite section, or my favorite recurring series on Beach Grade, is Blood Feud.
Oh, yeah.
You need more Blood Feuds.
I know. So we had a bunch at the start, and now we'll use Blood Feud generally when it's, like, real serious. Like, so I feel we weren't overusing it. But the ones we've had lately, like Matt Warshaw versus Reno Blood Feud, to me, that was epic writing right there. And
it's still going.
Yeah,
right?
No. Reno wrote a letter to Derek, which was amazing.
And then Derek published it, which I dig.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of fun things about Beach Grit, I think. Personally, I'm biased. But one of the funner things is there's honestly no back room. There's no closed door. It's like anything we get goes up online. Any conversation I have with anybody, from Zach Weisberg to anyone to Derek, you know, like our infighting we'll write about, it's in the surf industry that where there's back room after back room after back room after back room. To me, it's a Beach Grit is a breath of fresh air in that what I know is you know, what I know that's not going to get me sued is upfront.
So, break down that Reno-Matt Warshaw argument real quick, if you can.
I mean, so Reno, famous surfer from the 70s, 60s,
Reno Avalera.
Yeah.
And Shaper.
Hawaiian guy, amazing. He was frustrated, I guess, about his Encyclopedia of Surfing entry, and so teed off on Matt on Instagram, and then it was a long tee off, real mad.
But it was questioning Warshaw's research, basically.
It was questioning his research, and specifically, if I recall, to the fact that Reno's dad, Matt, I think, in the Encyclopedia of Surfing, said Reno's dad died in a bar fight in a Honolulu bar, and Reno was really mad and said that, no, he did not. He died at a pool house. There's something like so...
A fine, very minor detail.
Which is funny to me. Because it's a real surf thing, I think, and maybe a Hawaiian thing too, is they'll get so... People will get so mad at the smallest... Like, it was totally negligible.
It was.
He died in a... Reno's dad died in a kind of underworld scuffle, right?
Yes, and the way that Warshaw worded it was like... He was the strong arm for the local bar or whatever. Yeah. And then Reno's argument back was like, that's not true at all. He worked in the underworld, and it was, so it's like Reno's arguing, he did die, and it was underworld and seedy. It's just slightly different.
It's totally weird how, and part of it makes me, I mean, God bless Matt Warshaw, because I would not want his job ever. But, you know, surfers, I think, the oral history that surfers have, I think they'll just go crazy on it, where it's, okay, come on. It's all the same thing here, Reno. Like, the point is exactly the same thing. Your dad died. You know, in Honolulu, in a kind of a seedy / interesting way.
Yeah.
But some of the bigger arguments I've had in surf or with surf people have been just over weird minutia that I wrote. Like, I never wrote a single fin. I never.
Exactly.
Like,
so I thought that Reno was going to attack Matt for defaming the honor of his dad, but that really wasn't what it was at all.
Zero. It was that Matt got his research wrong. And then, I don't know why else Reno was mad. It seemed like he had a lot of pent-up anger or frustration. And maybe it's funny kind of in surf that there's only one authoritative voice, which is Matt Warshaw's voice. He's taking the mantle. He's taking it on. I don't think anybody else wanted to do the amount of work that he has done to, you know, it's not like he... I don't think he's arrogant at all about being surfing's only historian, but he is surfing's only historian. And maybe Reno or these guys get mad. I could see people getting mad, like, hey, you co-opted our history, even though nobody else wanted to do Matt's job. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. It's so representative of so much of the way that the surf world works. And I loved Warshaw's retort. Like, obviously, Reno just blasted that out on Instagram. He didn't contact Matt and be like, hey, can you amend this? He blasted it out on Instagram. So then Matt wrote basically an open letter sent it to you guys, and you guys posted it. And I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And it was so classy. And he, first sentence, Reno is my top three favorite surfers in the world of all time. And then went on to lovingly, you know, explain why. And then said, and by the way, when I was writing Reno's bio, I reached out to him 5 times. He never returned any messages. So I did my due diligence, and then I cross-referenced all the facts and back-checked with 8 different sources, and that's how I came up with this information, basically. Classy response.
I mean, Matt to me is just a classy guy, right? Like, it's so easy when you get a full frontal assault on you to get defensive right away, or to, you know, counterpunch. But Matt's lack of counterpunch and just, you know, stating both where he came to his conclusions, also, you know, that Reno was one of his top favorite surfers, and then at the end where he says to get jumped on, I can't pretend it doesn't hurt. So to admit that, you know, I think it's like, I'll dance through life half the time, and whatever, like, you slap all you want, nothing hurts.
Right.
For Matt to admit that had sting, to me, was a classy move too.
Well, it was endearing.
Yeah.
You know, it made me kind of realize that, yeah, dude, all of our feelings are in this a little bit.
I mean,
you know?
Totally. And again, to plug Matt's thing, you know, he just took the Encyclopedia of Surfing, put it behind a paywall. So now he's been doing God's work, or maybe Satan's work, for for so long now. And to me, I love the fact that I love the fact that it's off Surfer now. That Surfer's no longer the kind of gateway to the history of surfing, which to me it seems silly that they would let that go. But in letting that go, the fact that it's now ours, and not, you know, Beach Grits, but it's all of ours together, as long as you just pay your $3,
right?
To me is a beautiful thing.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than 1 billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
So that's, we should mention that to listeners, it's $3 monthly subscription.
Yep, and you get the entire Encyclopedia of Surfing, the entire History of Surfing, and the long form interview one.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's silly.
It is, yeah, I'm a huge fan. What was Reno's most recent response to that?
Did you read it?
I read it this morning. Did you read it?
Yeah, I read it. It's, I mean,
did he send it to you guys, or where did he publish that?
I don't know. He must have sent it to Derek. He didn't send it to me.
Oh, it was actually addressed to Derek.
It was top. Yes, that's but maybe he put it on his Facebook or something as an open letter, because I think Derek referenced it as an open letter. But to me, what I was just most impressed with, like, the content of what Reno said, you know, fighting over this or that, or, you know, I don't much care. It seemed like a real kind of old man, you know, I got mad about this stupid thing and blah, 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 I'm an old man off. But what I was so impressed with, I loved reading Reno's writing. It was amazing. He was like some yeah, I don't know. It was just Baroque, and it was the way he mixed his pronouns, and it was beautiful writing. I absolutely loved every word of it.
Well, there's a lot to criticize about it, but there was also some real poetry to it didn't expect.
Zero. It was the most poetic I think I've ever read a surfer write, and I'm talking about, you know, writing surfers too. I mean, like,
yeah,
from the journalism side too. It was absolutely, I loved every word of it.
Okay, well, additionally, he looks crazy.
Oh yeah,
like that's the other detail here. Yeah. Like, if regardless of what they're fighting about, when you read Matt's thing, you're like, well, this is a very reasonable statement to make and a well formulated thought. And then you read Reno's, and you're like, oh, this guy's a little bit nuts.
Yeah, but like, oh, that's I liked Matt's sober response. I liked Reno's totally. I mean, I can't even find words for it. I loved it so much, though. His off the wall, but in a genuinely, it wasn't like off the wall, poorly written. It was,
right,
he constructed like an almost work of art for the internet, which people don't do anymore, right? Like, I mean, the internet to me is so consumable.
Yeah.
Not that I don't put thought into what I write, but part of the fun, the enjoyable part, is that it's so consumable. So you don't have to be, you know, everything that I put up is littered with typos and,
yeah,
you know, misspellings and this and that and the other thing, because it's just meant to be, it's candy, you know, it's,
yeah,
meant to be consumed. And Reno put up something that would have taken me a year to write something as rich as what he wrote.
See, we save the fine art for the podcast world, Charles.
Yeah, exactly. See, that's what I need to get into, fine art of podcasts.
It's not candy, dude. This is the meat and potatoes. So, do you guys, I guess, this might be jumping ahead of my notes a little bit, but do you guys ever regret or feel bad about anything that you've ever posted on Beach Grit?
I don't. Okay. I think, or do I?
I mean, in the sense that, like, Warshaw said at the end of that, like, hey man, I can't admit, or I can't deny that this doesn't sting a little,
yeah,
bit. I feel like, I don't know, when you go to print on stuff, or even stuff that I've published on the podcast, I listen to later and I'm like, I wish I didn't say that a little bit. Does that ever happen?
I'm sure that I write stuff all the time. I think when I put something up, or when I write something that I think is was maybe inartful,
okay,
I think I'll double down internally and think, no, I'm so tired. You know, what I'm fighting against is surf industry conservatism. You know, that's, mm-hmm, in my mind, that is the windmill that I'm tilting at every day. And so when I fail, when I fail aiming at that, then I just force myself not to feel bad. Well, whatever, that person should add a tougher, but I'm a genuine asshole too. I mean, like, I don't say that in a, not an endearing one. Like, I just,
yeah,
don't, because part of it though is I don't care what, I would invite people to write whatever they wanted to about me if it was, you know, for some fun, let's spar, nobody spars. The entire surf,
right,
world is it's crickets. I can go lob grenades all day long into people's houses, and I can come home to my own house and it's not one grenade, which,
right,
I'm just so confused about. Why not have fun?
I know. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't get
people
it.
People are sensitive. Dude, people want to keep their jobs and they're sensitive. You know?
I guess I get the surf industry wanting to keep jobs. Like, that's something that I finally come to terms with. Is people don't want to rock the boat because this is it. This is their employer, and it's a contracting industry there's not other jobs out there. You know,
right.
So you lose your team rep job because you said something. Then you're done. But on the media side, I'm confused why the media doesn't go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
It's never. Nobody ever mentions each other, ever.
You're launching grenades.
I try.
At the inertia.
Yeah.
Weisberg.
I try to really get any kind of response. And to me, that they just seem like they're lifeless, right?
Well, it again, keeping jobs, even though he created that job for himself, I think he's going, hey, throw all the grenades you want. I get 500,000 clicks a month, or whatever the number is for them, maybe more than that. So I don't really care about your grenades.
Sure.
You know?
And I completely understand his reasoning. What I guess I don't understand is we're still surfers at the end, and so we can't have fun like surfers still, like where there's a fun kind of banter that can happen. And again, maybe he doesn't think it's fun. Maybe he thinks it's mean spirited, and
or he thinks it's jeopardizing his livelihood. Maybe, you know.
I mean, but there's no way I'm jeopard. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I would hope that I'm not that powerful.
Yeah.
Of course, that I'm jeopardizing the inertia entirely. I would love to sink that piece of shit.
It's terrible.
I would love to bring it all down. I think I can say it is the worst website on the internet. It's worse than Breitbart. It's worse than whatever the Breitbart lefty version is. It's worse than anything.
Why?
Because it's absolutely milquetoast. It has no point of view. And there's this kind of weird pan, like, oh, we celebrate all points of view. But they really don't. It's as curated as anything toward a specific goal, and not to admit that you have an audience, and you're, you know, it's all fine. Like, I know Beach Grit has an audience. I know who they are, and I know where we're driving every day. To pretend that you don't, and you're the definitive voice of Thinking Surfers or whatever their motto is, to me is just is to be absolutely ludicrous. And not to stand up for it. Like, when I met with Zach recently, and we had a, you know, fun back and forth.
You met with him, or when you encountered him?
When I encountered him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
When I encountered him recently, he was throwing some of his own riders under the bus, right? Like saying, "Well, we don't support everything we put up on the inertia." And he was trying to make that sound like that was one of the good parts of it,
right?
Of like, you know, we put all different voices up here. I mean, like, if I wrote for you, and you were at a party saying you didn't support your riders or the people you put up. So you're like, what kind of crappy thing is that? That's awful.
Yeah.
You as the editor of this thing or the founder of this thing, whether you agree or disagree is one thing. But like, to distance yourself from things, if it goes up, then you should totally stand behind it.
Right.
I mean, to me. I don't know. I, the lack of spine there is, there's just so many things about it that make me angry.
It is a little bit, I don't know, unsettling or just kind of, it offends my sensibility in some way, that lack of a spine that you're talking about. But at the same time, I do recognize, like, oh, they are obviously pandering to the broadest base of this triangle. If we're all in a triangle of surfers and being involved in interested in surfing, they're catering to the guy riding a soft top who bought it at Costco, who maybe actually lives away from the coast. Maybe he's in Arizona, but he comes out every summer and he surfs. And so when he's at work in Arizona throughout the rest of the year, he clicks on those articles.
Do you think he does? I bet he doesn't. You know, I think the only people that the inertia get is Huffington Post readers, and it's when the Huffington Post kind of kicks something inertia-y through, because they have those, I think, those like content sharing agreements with the Huffington Post, where, and so they'll get like a lot of aggregated viewers that way. But I would be shocked if even the soft top guy from Arizona was typing in www.theinertia.com. I don't think anybody cares about it. Nobody cares about it. They just come up good. They have a great SEO, search engine optimization.
Yeah.
They have good content sharing, and so they get clicks from other places. Nobody gives a shit about that site, though.
And they are following that clickbait model.
Sure.
It's like the top five ways to improve your...
Yeah, totally.
Your,
no, they're
your
playing...
pop-up or something.
Totally. You know? They're playing the game well, and their content... they're playing it well, and their content goes to a wider audience. But nobody, I've never met one surfer, never one kook surfer,
true,
never one hardcore, never one surfer who went to the inertia or liked it.
It's a very good point. One area of surfing that I really want to discuss, and I'm not even sure how to discuss it, is women's surfing. And I did send you this note, but I'm going to kind of go over it real quick for listeners. The reality is we can't ever have a real conversation about women surfing because we end up getting labeled as misogynist or sexist or whatever. But the other reality is when they ran the event at Jaws, the women got smashed. And we just saw the final of the Fiji Pro, where Courtney Conlog and Tatiana Weston Webb surfed 8 to 10 foot cloud break in the morning. And they got smashed. And Courtney won the event with an 8.74 heat total. Neither of them made a barrel. And it's like, all that the commentators say is, oh, these women are so brave. And I agree with them. They are brave. But they're not making barrels. And they're not even really doing turns. They're just surviving a wave. And so it's okay to say they're brave, but let's call a spade a spade and be like, wow, that was a disappointing heat. Nobody even got a 10-point total. You know what I mean?
Totally.
I don't know what the conversation is. I don't know how to fix it. I just want to be able to have the conversation.
See, so to me, part of the problem is, right, is you have like these weird random times scattered throughout, not even the year, but scattered throughout like a few years. Where, so take for example the women out of Jaws and then the women out of Cloudbreak. It's not like they're out surfing Cloud. I mean, they can surf Cloudbreak, I guess, all they want, but it's not like there's a competition there in Big Cloudbreak for them ever, and it's not like there's a competition at Jaws. So they'll throw these women out, I feel, to the wolves in these either specialty events like Jaws, where they'll just toss them out there, or Cloudbreak, where all of a sudden they'll announce, you know, okay, hey, wait, there's swell coming. We're going to wait for the, you know, instead of finishing the day that they should have, frankly, finished it on, had run up to that point, right? And,
yeah.
And so you're going to, you know, and I get it, swell's coming and that's all great. But if you want the women to surf in great, in good Cloudbreak, then give them their whole event a time when the guys aren't there at good Cloudbreak, right? Let them go out there, let them train, let them, I have no doubt that, you know, I know Bethany can surf amazing in, you know, Big Surf. And for sure those girls, if that was, if that's what they were supposed to do, if that's the way their tour was geared, their tour is not geared at all towards that, right? They're never in any surf like that. I mean, Cloudbreak is the only wave on their schedule that's even remotely kind of throaty, right?
I mean, Honolulu could be argued,
but it's not
the same.
No, it's not the same as you know, 8 to 10 foot Cloudbreak. Nothing is. And so throwing them out there for the and expecting them to, I think, succeed, even though nothing in their entire world is geared toward that, to me is the fault lays with the WSL on that particular one. And I firmly believe that the women need their own tour that's not connected at all to the men's tour. And I know that, you know, the logistics and the carrying web gear and whatever, but fucking figure it out. Like, figure out which waves, you know, are best geared toward the kind of surfing not only the women are doing now, but also the kind of surfing they should be doing.
Yeah.
Make it 5 events, right? But really treat the women's tour with seriousness. And I don't think it's treated with seriousness. I think it's still, like, what they've done is make a WNBA, I feel, like the Women's Basketball Association, where it's a total, I mean, I guess the WNBA is kind of a going concern now, but it's kind of an afterthought of this derivative of this men's thing, where I think, I don't know why surfing couldn't be like gymnastics, right? Where I think more people watch women's gymnastics than men's gymnastics when it comes to the Olympics. And they also have different disciplines, right? The men do the Iron Cross or whatever on the rings, strengthy stuff, while the women do, you know, floor dancing or whatever, plus all the athletic stuff they do on the women's gymnastics side. But I think zero thought is given into what women's surfing should be. And that's I'm sure there's been some thought. I'm sure they have roundtable discussions and really try to figure it out. But it sure doesn't come across like they're thinking about it very much. It seems like a total throwaway.
So I'm going to take a counterpoint. I disagree with you on a couple of things. Number one, I don't think it's the WSL's fault necessarily, because I feel like they are trying to navigate it and, like, at once not patronize the women by what you're saying, giving them their own tour, and then, like, well, let's just let them go surf lowers where it's a great showcasing of their ability, and let's keep them away from Pipeline. They've done that in the past, and they do it a little bit, but now they're seeing opportunities where, like, hey, there is a legitimate swell coming. These women have proven themselves in other swells in past Fiji's events, so let's actually let them rise to the occasion, hold off the final until the men's waiting period, and let them run in good surf. They've proven themselves up until this point. Let's allow them to showcase it. The problem is they faltered, you know? So now the WSL goes, well, what do we do? At the Jaws event, 2 women went to the hospital.
Sure,
can totally. We very well put them back out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jaws is a weird anomaly just because it's Jaws. I mean, it's like, I can't speak to Jaws as well, but Cloudbreak, I feel, if they would have run the whole women's event, if they would have run the whole thing in 8 to 10 Cloudbreak, sure, I think some women would have failed, but some would have totally, I think, we would have seen amazing barrels. Like, the fact that our sample size was so small, it was Toddy and Courtney going in cold to this morning one heat, right?
Like, and it was a shifty day. It was challenging.
Totally. And they hadn't had a chance to sit and watch it. I mean, I'm sure they'd been surfing the last couple of days, but I mean, it was
It was a cold, yeah.
Yeah, it was. They went in cold. Have an event at Fiji where you're not splitting a waiting period with the men, right? Where you have your own window. And, you know, I mean, I just have no doubt. There's nothing I've seen that makes me think that, Jaws aside, right? I don't know about Jaws.
Yeah.
But that the woman, like lots of the women on that tour, wouldn't have done, you know, we would have seen a real show if we would have seen the whole crew out there at 8 to 10 cloud break.
I guess so. While you said you blame the WSL, I'm going to blame the girls. Like, I'm going to blame Courtney and Tati, because the real deal is, look at footage of Rochelle Ballard in 1998. She was getting shacked out there.
Yeah.
And doing turns. That surfing would have won the event this year. Keala Kenley, look at the waves that she's charged. You know what I mean? So I'm going, you guys, get your act together. What are you doing? You're behind the curve. Now, I say that knowing that the best wave ever surfed at J-Bay was Tom Curran in 1982 on the very first wave that he caught ever at J-Bay, and nobody's ever surpassed that again. So I know that, like, that does take place regardless of what area of surfing you're talking about. But still, I kind of look at that and I go, Court, what were you doing? You got straight smashed on a few waves out there.
But I still wonder, though, how many times, how many, like, nothing in their whole, you know, and maybe it's not the WSL's fault, you're right. Like, it's... but how many times does Courtney or Tatiana through the year have to actually surf waves like that? They don't. They don't do it for photo shoots.
It's incumbent upon them to go find them.
Yeah. I mean, I guess so. Okay, it's the girls' fault. Girls?
Like, Kelly goes to Tahiti or to J-Bay, or not, Cloud Break, that's sure. What we're talking about. Kelly goes to Fiji 4 or 5 times a year when there's no event there, chasing the swell. And okay. I know Tyler's done that there, actually.
Sure. Well, that's the thing, too, right? Like, I wonder if that it was just a bad sample. Like, if Tati and Courtney are not the girls who do that. But I feel that, you know, I think that Coco Ho might have had fun out there. And
Sally's done well.
Precisely. Where it was just it just so happened that those were the girls that made the final in, you know, not super small, but, you know, playful cloud break. But those were the girls who did well there.
Yeah.
And typically, you know, it's not going to be necessarily the girls who would, you know, it just didn't work.
Well, I think you're right, though. It was a poor sample, period. Like, that is really what happened at that event. I hate to paint them with, like, a full brush.
Because watching, I watched more, I think, because it wasn't during the men's waiting period or whatever. It didn't seem like an afterthought. I watched more of that event, the women's event, you know, than I have watched for the last 2 years probably of the women's surfing. And to me, there's like, it was fun. I had a super enjoyable time. Like, I watched it because I wanted to, not because I felt like I was being forced to,
right?
Which sometimes, you know, when they'll click from the guys to the girls,
there's such a disparity.
And it's just like and they're like, I'll just click it off.
Exactly.
But there's watching the girls in their own. It just made me think that if they had their own tour, if their skill wouldn't really flourish, and then everyone would, you know, be winners, right?
I agree.
Would get a whole nother kind of surfing to watch. I still feel that they're forcing. And what do I know? I know nothing. But it feels like they're trying to force themselves into a male kind of box, a male way to surf. And I still would love to see what's female surfing, right?
Well, Stephanie Gilmore is.
Yeah. Well, and Lisa Anderson is too, right? Like, when I watch clips of Lisa surfing, I don't feel, even though Lisa, I know, modeled herself off of Potts and Curran and these guys, she took them and made it feminine. Where when I look at a lot of the surfing girls, these, I don't feel a femininity. Like, I see them as feminine, right? Like, they're beautiful and, you know.
Yeah.
They're physically feminine, but the way they surf isn't feminine. It's rough. It's kind of into the lip, and you know, all, like, there's nothing graceful.
Well, so I agree with you completely, and I think the two, the dichotomy there is Courtney Conlogue, I feel like models her surfing after the male side of the tour. Steph Gilmore, on the other side of the spectrum, is completely doing her own thing, playing jazz. And it's freaking amazing. It's oftentimes more enjoyable than a lot of the male surfers.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, I think, again, I've been stuck in a box watching Lisa Anderson surf pretty much on loop for the last, you know, couple months. And I would rather watch Lisa Anderson surf than you know, a whole ton of the guys.
Right. I know we're pressed for time. What time do you actually have to leave? How many minutes do we got?
Like five.
Okay. Let's close with what you were just talking about. Why are you spending so much time watching Lisa Anderson surf?
So I'm directing Lisa Anderson's kind of bio documentary called Trouble. It'll be out, or we'll screen it sometime in July. I think around the U.S. Open we'll screen or have a screener. But then, yeah, it's a festival film. So
why is it called Trouble?
Trouble. Trouble was Lisa's nickname. Growing up, she's a runaway. Yeah, Lisa's story is absolutely epic to me. It's one of the most or more interesting surf stories. Not only what she did as a woman, but what she did just as, you know, as a surfer. Like what she sacrificed to surf is beautiful. I mean, her story is just great. So I'm feel honored that I'm in the kind of driver's seat of telling it.
Who knew you were a film director, dude?
I'm a film director. I'm a director of films.
So your first film was Jamie O'Brien's Who Is J.O.B.?
Yep, Who Is J.O.B.? Not the TV one, but the actual film.
The first one.
Yeah, the first one.
And how did you get into that?
I'd worked with Jamie in the past on some stuff, some writing stuff, and it, like a little bit with the social media way forever ago. And then I had moved to Australia. And Jamie, I think, was like deep into his film at that, or, you know, he'd been filming for 3 years, but they had no story. So he called me and just said, "Hey, I need help. Would you come direct it?" So
he reached out to you just because of your writing background?
Because he and I had done some stuff together, and I think he just wasn't finding, the right, I'd lived with him out on the North Shore for a while and stuff, like, I'd spent plenty of time with him, like weeks with him. And yeah, I think he just wasn't finding, he had all this footage, they filmed, I think it was like 3 years, you know, and so every clip basically was an A+ clip. They just had no way of putting it together that wasn't just A+ clip after A+ clip. Right. So yeah, so I came in and worked with Dayton, the editor, and, you know, I mean, yeah, when I showed up, there was literally just stacks of footage. And so we stitched it together and made a film.
Do you have an editing background or anything, or is it more just oversight?
Zero. Yeah, okay. I can't, you know, move a frame or pick a song. I just sit there and kind of work with the editor and, okay, let's, you know, here's the story, right? Like, to me, it's all these movies are story, which is what typically is missing from surf film in general, or, you know, even broader sports docs. Like, I think HBO does some good ones, but generally they're just the talking head, you know, other people saying how amazing this one person was and how much they changed the world forever and ever, amen, and just hyperbole. Right. And where I feel that sports doc has gone to such a place of hyperbole where you can't say anything anymore, because everything, every single moment was a life-changing, earth-shattering, you know, ridiculous moment. And so with Lisa's film, you know, as kind of just a storyteller, that's boring to me to be hyperbole. I want hers to be quiet. I want it to be soft. I want it to be a person as they're generally or genuinely struggling with their own life, both, you know, having lived it and also trying to recall what it felt like at the moment. And there's something, I don't know, there's something quiet and beautiful about, I love her voice. I love the way her voice sounds. And so I just want her narrating, you know, I want her narrating her life, and I don't want other people weighing in on it on film.
So it's Lisa through interviews narrating her story with archival footage, with new footage.
It'll be a mix of archival and new, but the bulk of it will be archival.
Okay. Fascinating. And what's the runtime going to be, like 60 minutes?
Yeah, it'll be 60. I think, yeah, just shoot for it.
What are your ambitions as a filmmaker moving forward? Do you have any, or is it just project by project?
No, yeah, I have zero ambitions for film. I, you know, unfortunately, I like to write, but I love watching. I watch way more than I read, and just the way, you know, TV, and I mean, I just think it's obviously a cliche to say, but the golden age of television, really, or of. You know, any, all different kinds of formats of moving pictures. So I would, yeah, I mean, maybe I should aim to get more into it.
I think it is television specifically. Like, television is in a renaissance that's amazing right now just because of the platforms. So then, are you working on any writing right now? And what are you working on?
I just finished Cocaine Plus Surfing, a love story, which is the follow-up to Welcome to Paradise. So I finished it May 1st. It's at the publisher, so I don't know. Yeah, it gutted me. It was a hard one to write.
Can you give us a quick synopsis?
Oh, I mean, it started as the kind of shared history that cocaine and surfing have, which I tied back to the Peruvian surfers in whenever it was, 3000 BC. Okay. And yeah, you know, and cocaine or the coca bush, I think was the earliest coca bush ever discovered, was almost the exact same time that the Peruvians started surfing. So that surfers have loved their cocaine from the dawn of time. And I kind of weave the histories together, but as the book goes, it almost becomes more, or a thread of it is my own frustration with my own life. Like, why the hell am I still writing? I'm a 40-year-old man and I'm writing about surf. Like, what went wrong in my life that this is where I'm at? And so dealing with, you know, just surf culture, it's a picture of California surf culture in the way that Welcome to Paradise was a brief snapshot of Hawaiian surf culture.
Amazing. All right. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, thank
Go
you.
Pick up your kid, dude.
Go on. Thank you so much.
Right on, dude. Thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Right on. Thank you very much, Chaz Smith. Always a blast to see you and to get together with you. Listeners, if you want to know more about Chaz Smith, episode number 72 of this show, Surf Splendor, was a straight-up hour-long interview with Chaz detailing his history as a war correspondent, a lot of stories out of his book, Welcome to Paradise, Now Go From Hell. So check that episode out. And then there was a second episode. It's episode number 111, which was with Chaz and then his partner in Beach Grit, Derek Riley, also a co-founder of Stab Magazine. So Derek's a super interesting dude. So you should check out that episode as well just to hear more from them if you enjoyed this one. And Chaz and I will be back together again to bring you more stories from Beach Grit. Make sure to follow beachgrit.com. And then, of course, Chaz's personal Instagram, which is great, is reports from hell. And then I'll link to all of that stuff on surfsplendorpodcast.com. And everything that Chaz and I discussed in this episode is also there. And at Surf Splendor on Instagram. And then make sure, of course, to share the show with friends. If you enjoyed this, if you found any of it valuable at all, share it with friends. That's how we keep this show growing. I will continue to produce content if you continue to help us grow the audience. Thank you very much. And then, of course, we have a PayPal donation set up on surfsplendorpodcast.com. If you would like to do a $5 monthly donation, that really does help this show. Recently invested in some new equipment and all that sort of stuff. So that's all the business that I have for now. I'll be back next week with an episode of Spit with Scott Bass, and actually, additionally, an episode of Shaping Surfing with Jeff McCallum, surfboard shaper Jeff McCallum. So look forward to that. Until then, this is David Scales signing off and just reminding you, in between listening to podcasts and watching the Fiji Pro, make sure that you get back in the ocean, get a couple of waves, and shred on.